exactly right. Being anti-illegal immigration is not the same as being anti-immigrant. It is not the same as being a racist. And if the left continues to push this, they are in for a bruising in 2020. Sam Rogowski here, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Happy Saturday. And many, many apologies for last week's technical difficulties. We here inadvertently loaded the wrong show last Saturday when we were, I guess, gleefully out of the studio, ready to tackle the weekend. And I don't know how it happened, but we uploaded, apparently, the show that we'd done in January, our New Year's show, and almost immediately began receiving emails and direct messages and other forms of frantic communication from many of you that the show had done, we had the wrong show. But we fixed it on Sunday, and so if you haven't gotten back to listening to last week's program, missed it due to these difficulties, please go back and load it because it's all fixed up now. All right. I'm telling you, there is something right now. The sense I have is a step gone too far on this racism gambit. I mean, first of all, everything to the left is a racial issue. Everything is, how might we say, seen through a certain prism that seeks to paint Republicans, Trumpists, and other people on the right as racists if their ideology in any way doesn't comport with the thinking on the left. And none is a better example of this than immigration, and it's going to fail. Folks, it's going to fail. And I'll tell you, I know for a fact that there was just recently a congressional delegation that was sent to the border. And these members of Congress that went down there, I don't know, AOC was not with them. So that's why we haven't heard of this particular event. There was no brouhaha. It was a quiet fact-finding mission. And the members of Congress that went down there got to speak with the ICE agents that are on the front lines and basically saw the situation for what it is. Illegal immigration is used by the cartels to exploit weaknesses in our border and to basically be a vehicle for inserting massive amounts of drugs into the country. And this, by the way, is not a racist position at all. This is just one of the terrible facts there on the border. Do you know how they do that? It's an interesting thing. So the whenever they apprehend, the ICE agents apprehend a border crosser, an illegal immigrant, they ask them a series of questions. One of the questions that they ask is, did you come into contact with any member of the cartels? And do you know what the survey, and they keep statistics on all of this, do you know what the percentage statistic for the number of border crossers who encounter and interact with the cartel? Do you know what the statistic is, the percentage? It is literally 100%. And the reason for this is that apparently the cartels, they will stop border crossers. So, you know, they come across in groups. The coyotes lead them up through these dangerous, impassable areas. And the cartels will stop and amass a group of migrants until they number about 1,000 or so. And then they take them to a spot along the border and have them all cross as one at once. And this they use, of course, you can imagine, as a diversionary tactic, which draws all the ICE agents to that particular spot and leaves open vulnerable places for then various mules to bring drugs in to the United States and cross unimpeded. And this is just one of the tragedies that occurs down there. So the only answer, and even Democrats, if you get them speaking off the record privately, will concede that a wall, a secure border, is essential. And the deal, right, there's no mention of a wall being racist. There's no mention of a wall being a part of Trump's white nationalist movement, they understand that the border is porous. And the deal out there, the deal to be had on immigration, plain and simple, take all the theatrics away from it, the deal that is, that could conceivably have cross-party appeal is immigration reform in return for securing the border. And this is what, look, I've been saying this since before this program even began. I always told you that the fair deal here is to secure the border, create a path to citizenship for those people that are already here, and take the ridiculously restrictive math that we have on legal immigration and open it up. Because the restrictions that are currently in place on immigration, the numbers, right, the limits, are a fiction. They're not real. And they're not real because we have so many millions of people every year crossing the border illegally that the legal immigration numbers really only serve to exclude, ironically, people from Europe and other places from the world. But we're absolutely, whoever comes and is able to get into Mexico has a high degree of probability that they're going to cross into the U.S. unimpeded. So with this said, we simply want to know who's coming through the door. We want a wall. We want to build a door. We want to know who's coming through the door. And this is not an unreasonable position. And every leftist freak that comes out and talks about this as being some kind of a racist conspiracy to bar people from color simply because we want to secure the border and because we want immigrants who we want to know who the immigrants are that come into our country. And because, dare we ask, that perhaps we want to have immigrants come in who fill certain requirements, certain needs that we have, that we could have the means of attracting higher quality immigrants. And quality, again, means not their race, not their backgrounds, but their skill sets, their education, okay? Things like this. Now, there is an appetite. There's a political appetite for this, I believe, even in within the Democratic Party. The problem is the Democratic Party is held hostage by the crazy fanatics. That you have the AOCs, the rest of the Hispanic caucus, the crazy left-wing nut jobs in there. These people are literally holding this entire process hostage. And the problem that we have, well, the country has, frankly, is no resolution is in sight because the Democrats have a majority and the left-wing fanatics within the Democratic Party hold enough clout, have enough power to effectively block Pelosi from being able to make any kind of a deal here. So this problem, every time you see the crisis at the border and you see it developing and you, mark my words, and you think you're being told by the media that it is a Trump-created issue and that Trump is jailing children and that Trump is a racist and that Trump doesn't want brown people here, just pause for a minute and understand this. It is gospel truth. A deal would happen were it not for the left wing of the Democratic Party. And there is nothing more. I promise you this. There is nothing more that Trump would want before the election than a deal on immigration, a deal that satisfies his base, which would bring a secure border, and a deal that would show moderation and would prove that he is not the person that he's being painted to be. The Democrats can't make this deal, though, because they know it would put Trump in a good light. They know that truthfully that he is not a guy who is what they say he is. They know he's not the racist. They know he's not the crazy bigot. They know he's not the person that wants zero immigration from countries where predominantly there are people of color. They know all of this. Instead, their biggest concern is politicking for the election. Their biggest concern is not solving the crisis, but making it worse. They literally want to make the crisis worse. And what for what reason other than to win in 2020. And I think this all backfires massively in their faces. Because I think that the American public is not this stupid. Democrats hope you're stupid, but you're not. And you understand intuitively that this is something that can happen. Now, let me give you an example here of how words get misconstrued. There is a guy, Ken Cuccinelli, who's been making the interviews. He is the director of ICE. And this guy is just fantastic, a fantastic person for the position, because he is getting skewered and he's fighting back. But the narrative right now about Cuccinelli is that he doesn't want any non-Europeans entering the country, that he is parroting, or I guess being a steward of, the Trump administration policy that no people of color should be admitted in the United States. And this is the narrative that CNN, MSNBC, and others in the left-wing media have been propagandizing for a better part of a week and a half now. And I want to tell you and show you how this false narrative was created, because it happened before my very eyes, and I have the proof for it. So this whole thing got kicked off on NPR with Rachel Martin. She does a phone interview. This is on the radio. Phone interview with Ken Cuccinelli, asking him about the Trump administration policy that would favor having self-sufficient immigrants, right? Having immigrants that come to the country that are not going to go on welfare. Does that seem like a fairly straightforward thing that we would want? So there's no mention of country of origin. There's no mention of skin color. It's literally the requirement that people who are admitted, foreign aliens that are admitted into this country, not be immediately in a place that would immediately require public assistance. Here is Cuccinelli, in his own words, explaining the interview. And then you'll see what Rachel Martin, the host of NPR, introduces into the conversation. Pay attention to this.
All immigrants who can stand on their own two feet, be self-sufficient, pull themselves up by their bootstraps, again, as in the American tradition. My Italian-Irish heritage looks back at that. Most people in America look back at that. And that's what we expect going forward. This is a 140-year-old tradition in this country legally. And
would you also agree that Emma Lazarus's words etched on the Statue of Liberty, "Give me your tired, your poor," are also part of the American ethos?
They certainly are. Give me your tired and your poor who can stand on their own two feet and who will not become a public charge. That plaque was put on the Statue of Liberty at almost the same time as the first public charge law was passed. Very interesting timing.
So this interview gets put out there, and immediately, this is now translated to mean that Cuccinelli says, yeah, give me your poor and your tired, just make sure they're not people of color. Now, you think I'm exaggerating here. I am literally not exaggerating. Here is a interview that happened the following week on Tuesday of this week. So this original interview happened Thursday, almost a week and we'll call it 2 days ago. And then after the weekend, here is CNN's intrepid journalist, Aaron Burnett, grilling Ken Cuccinelli about this Emma Lazarus poem that is on the Statue of Liberty, "Give me your tired, give me your poor." And here is the exchange.
I wasn't writing poetry, Aaron. Don't change the facts.
I'm not changing the facts. I'm just
you're
saying,
twisting this like
on
the left has done all day today.
No, because I think it's important. You're saying that it's very important to be able to stand on your own two feet. A lot of people may support you and respect your saying that. But the poem doesn't say that, right? The poem that's on the Statue of Liberty.
I didn't bring up the poem.
Well,
an NPR reporter did, and now you have.
Okay,
I didn't bring it up. I'll answer your substantive intelligence questions.
So I'm going to give you a substantive intelligence. Okay.
Yeah, and then it continues. So he's pushing back to her. And this is where now the whole idea that he is only talking about people, he only wants people from Europe, and this is where it comes from. Listen to this.
Wretched, poor, refuse, right? That's what the poem says America's supposed to stand for. So what do you think America stands for?
Well, of course, that poem was referring back to people coming from Europe. where they had class-based societies where people were considered wretched if they weren't in the right class. And it was introduced, it was written one year after the first federal public charge rule was written that says, and I'll quote it, any person unable to take care of himself without becoming a public charge, unquote, would be inadmissible. Or in the terms that my agency deals with, they can't do what's called adjusting status, getting a green card, becoming legal permanent residents. Same exact time, Aaron, same exact time. In the year it went on the Statue of Liberty, 1903, another federal law was passed expanding the elements of public charge by Congress.
Okay, so imagine you are a normal person. Perhaps you're not even a dedicated Trumpist, but you're a reasonable person. Did you, in any of this, hear racist language? Did you hear in any of this, I don't know, some sort of, I suppose, a desire to drive immigration toward white only? There's no possible way. It's a fairly straightforward thing. If you come to this country as an immigrant, we expect you to be able to work. So if you come knocking on the door and you're in a position where you're likely not to work and you're likely to have to go on Medicare and likely have to go on welfare and likely have to get housing, a housing stipend of some kind, well, maybe, just maybe, you're not the kind of immigrant that we want. And that's not racist. When we come back, this now is MSNBC reacting to all of this. You've gotten the background. You've heard what Ken Cuccinelli said. You heard how this all got started. And you'll now listen to what they're saying about it, because this is where I think the left loses the middle of the road people. This is where MSNBC, CNN, and all the other kooks on the left just lose us. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rejofsky on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Well, I also like the absurdity that the entire immigration debate is now framed by the Emma Lazarus poem, The New Colossus, that is on a brass plaque on the Statue of Liberty. This from the left, who don't give a rat's rear end what's written in the Constitution, which, as best as I found out in law school, is still a legally binding document. But they are all about this Emma Lazarus poem. The part of the poem that they're focusing on, and you saw this in the exchanges that I just played. We just played these clips here in the last segment. The part that they're focusing on is the "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest tossed to me," and that part of the poem is a quote that is basically being spoken as if it were attributed to the Statue of Liberty herself. But the part here that Cuccinelli is absolutely right about, when he said originally, when this all thing started, he was talking to Aaron Burnett. And he said, well, of course, that poem was referring back to people from Europe coming where they had class-based societies, where people were considered wretched if they weren't in the right class. And the reason he's, by the way, 100% right about this is because the poem, the part that they're not quoting, of course, imagine the left selectively quoting from a document. This is where the quote, that the first line that the Statue of Liberty is speaking, if you will, is "Keep ancient lands, your storied pomp. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses, your storied pomp." That's exactly. You keep your aristocrats, you keep your people of privilege, you keep all your high class fuddy-duddy people. Give me the huddled masses. And what did that mean practically in the time? We got all the best. We got the best of the best. The inbred aristocrats all stayed in Europe, and we got the hardworking people from Ireland and Italy that came here and worked hard and started businesses. And I'm not saying for a minute here, I want to make an important point. I'm not saying for a minute here that any of this implies that even illegal immigrants don't come here to work hard. They do. And we want people like that. And my argument in all of this is those are the people we want here legally. Those are the people that would likely make the cut. And wouldn't it be better? Think about this. Wouldn't it be better to be admitting these people through a door, through an accelerated process where we did a quick background check, figured out who they were, took a photo, got a thumbprint, whatever it was, retinal scan, I don't know, but we had an idea who was coming in. On a financial side, wouldn't it be nice as instead of paying a coyote $4,000, they'd pay $2,500 to the State Department for processing? Would be nice to collect that money. I mean, it could be a self-funded process. So I'm just putting that out there. But here is why the left is losing the argument, because they're not making any kind of principled arguments here. They're not arguing any facts. They have taken this discussion about Emma Lazarus and her poem and what Cuccinelli is doing quite eloquently to explain what it meant in context in 1903 when it was written. And they are making it sound as though Cuccinelli and the whole Trump administration are a bunch of white nationalists. Listen here to a panel here. We got Chris Jansing. She's the female reporter. And there's a Jason Johnson of The Root magazine. This is on Wednesday. And you'll hear what kind of insanity they're talking about.
This news is a cruel new step toward weaponizing programs that are intended to help people by making them instead a means of separating families and sending immigrants and communities of color one message: you are not welcome here.
This is what white nationalism looks like in policy. I've been saying this all along, that white nationalism is a belief that America is a white Christian straight country. And if you're not a white straight Christian, then they don't want you here. They want to reshape and change the demographics of the United States of America. And this is how they're going to do it.
Where did any of that come from? Literally where? This is insanity. And the fact that other mainstream, we'll call them traction-getting Democratic candidates are going along with this, I think is absolutely political suicide. More on this when we come back. Also, don't worry, I will talk to you about what happened with Chris Cuomo and my thoughts on that. And of course, yes, I know, Hong Kong, Rashida Tlaib, all of this coming up later in the program. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam Rojofsky. You'll find him very interesting. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, proudly pro-immigrant and pro-wall. The two can go, in fact, hand in hand. Speaking of walls and immigration, I have to die. I'm going to just take a pause here and bring up Rashida Tlaib. This is exactly why the left, the political left in this country is in such peril, because they've got kooky people like this sucking all the oxygen out of the room and getting totally undeserved attention. They're getting attention because of their own stupidity. So here's, if you're wondering what the big brouhaha here is, I'll explain it all to you. Around, I don't know, about 2-3 months ago, AIPAC, the pro-Israel lobby in Washington was organizing a trip, a congressional delegation trip to Israel. The trip ended maybe a week ago or so. So it took place, let's say, about 2 weeks ago. And as this trip was getting advanced, Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, and I believe also Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez decided to do their own version of this trip. They were going to do their own thing because they're special and they hate Israel. So they, and this trip was going to meet with certain people and advocate for the so-called BDS movement, which is what stands for, boycott, divestiture, and sanctions. Thank you. And Israel obviously doesn't like to welcome people to their country who are maybe going to be protesting its very existence. It's just not really what Israel does, and there are not many countries in the world that do. So Israel gently first said, you know, you're maybe not really going to be welcome. And then there was maybe about 2 weeks ago or so, there was a firm line that came out from their foreign ministry that said, yeah, you know, if you're here to advocate for BDS, no, thank you. Well, fast forward to this week, and I'm pulling it up here from my stack of stuff as quickly as I can, because Rashida Tlaib, a congresswoman from Michigan's 13th congressional district, wrote a letter, and this letter was from her, like on her letterhead as a congresswoman, and it was dated August the 15th. What was that? That was 2 days ago. And it was written to the Ministry of Interior in Jerusalem. Mr. Derry, I would like to request admittance to Israel in order to visit my relatives. And specifically, my grandmother, who is in her 90s and lives in some place in Palestine. This could be my last opportunity to see her. I will respect, this is the key line, I will respect any restrictions and will not promote boycotts against Israel during my visit. Thank you, Representative Rashida Tlaib. You know what happened? Israel said, okay, we accept your representations. You're welcome to come. One day later, yesterday, Friday afternoon, a big statement came out from Rashida Tlaib's office saying, I refuse to accept these restrictions, these racist restrictions on me placed by the state of Israel. By the way, you think I'm exaggerating this. Here's the first line. Quote, in my attempt to visit Palestine, no mention of Israel now, I've experienced the same racist treatment that many Palestinian Americans endure when encountering the Israeli government and so forth and so on. It goes on. It's like a wall of text. And then she, on her own Twitter, said basically the same thing. Yeah. Do you realize how stupid this is? It was never about her grandmother. It was the... Her grandmother, poor grandmother, is an incidental victim of this. That now the media is showing up to her grandmother's rock pit house, you know, and they're showing her poor grandmother, and my poor grandmother's not going to see Rashida Tlaib. You know, the real part of the story is that in all her years of, she's got enough money to run for Congress, she's got enough money to rabble rouse and travel the country advocating for her nonsense. In all these years, she didn't ever go to visit her grandmother. Her grandmother hasn't seen her for a long time. And then only when it was politically expedient, she makes this about her situ, S-I-T-U, which I guess is how they call their grandmothers there. Yes, Israel doesn't want to admit an anti-Semite. They don't want to admit somebody who is advocating openly for the destruction of Israel. Now, some people have been saying, but we give a lot of money to Israel. And that is true. America writes Israel a big check every year. And so Israel can't really pick and choose which members of it can't refuse America's members of Congress. It's like having a sugar daddy and then not letting him come over to your house. Some of you will understand that reference. But at any rate, I would submit that Israel's looking at her and saying she's irrelevant. She's got no power in Congress and we can exclude her just fine. It's the American public and the American political establishment that we have to please. They are our benefactors. And we've just put on a lovely trip for them where a lot of other more sane congressmen and women went and attended and visited Israel without incident. So this whole controversy, all it does is show how absolutely bat nuts crazy these people are. And the more negative attention that is drawn to Rashida Tlaib and to AOC and to Ilhan Omar, because remember, it was Ilhan Omar that also was co-planning this trip. And it was Ilhan Omar that also was barred from entering. Unfortunately for Ilhan Omar, she did not have a grandmother in Palestine. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
As a point of humor, may I please mention that the poetress, or is it poetrix? Don't know. But at any rate, the woman that wrote the poem for the Statue of Liberty that it is absolutely being quoted now as basically a legal constitutional document binding the United States to a policy on immigration. Do you know that Emma Lazarus was a devoted Zionist? I mean this in the technical sense of the term, because, of course, Zionism is a dirty word if you're hanging out with Ilhan Omar. But this is before the creation of the State of Israel by many, many years. There was a movement to create a homeland for the Jewish people. It precedes this movement, by the way, precedes World War II, the Holocaust, goes back to the age of Napoleon, I believe. And it was Emma Lazarus who later in life became very interested in her Jewish roots and apparently became quite an advocate for Zionism, in international Zionism, and did so from her home here in the United States. So this, I think, might be a bit inconvenient for those that on the left that want to quote her to tarnish Trump, but at the same time do not like the Jewish homeland of Israel. Contradictions on the left. Okay, when we come back, let's refocus this back to the things that matter for 2020, along with a little bit of humor. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rojofsky. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, I've been meaning to tell you something important for a little while. Have you heard of DuckDuckGo? It's a new search engine that is, I think, becoming a great alternative to Google. Now, I understand that when we say that we Google something, it's kind of like saying we use a Kleenex. It doesn't necessarily mean that we're using a Kleenex brand tissue. But nobody says, can I have a tissue? They say, can I have a Kleenex? So when you search for something on the internet, if you Google it, it doesn't necessarily mean that you need to use Google. And I'll tell you, from my perspective, and the more that comes out, Google is absolutely dedicated to hiding and obfuscating conservative views. And I do not use Google as a search engine anymore. I noticed this, by the way, already back in 2016 when we were live every night on KABC in the lead up to the election. And I'd be doing show prep and I'd want to look up a particular article. And I knew, right, I knew what I was looking for. And I'm not an idiot. I know how to use search terms. And I never, and you'd put the search terms in for whatever it was you're looking for. So let's say Trump latest poll numbers. And if they were good, they wouldn't show up. Instead, you would get these long liberal explanations for why Trump's going to lose. Like it was so obviously a matter of an algorithm that had been tampered with for political reasons. So now we have insiders that are coming out and speaking publicly about this. And it's clear that Google absolutely is dedicated to Trump losing. But that's, you know, whether you agree with that or not, don't you want a search algorithm that delivers to you the best results in the order of what the best results really are based on keywords and such? I want a search that gives it to me straight. I don't want a pro-Trump search. I don't want an anti-Trump search. I don't want a pro-American search or an anti-American search. I just want the internet to be a marketplace of ideas it was always intended to be. So my advice, my little pearl of Sam Nation tips is to try out DuckDuckGo. And I've put it on my devices as a default search engine. Sometimes it creates a little bit of a problem with places because Google Places are better. You know, they've already accumulated and indexed restaurants and stores and that type of thing. So when you're on Google as a default search engine, you're very quickly able to find the store hours or restaurant hours, that kind of thing. But other than that, when I am looking up things, researching to certain information that I need to do this program, I just avoid Google like the plague. It does not help me. If I had a pro Hillary and a pro Obama and a pro Biden show, maybe I would be in a good place. But even then, I would end up with crap that's all lovey dovey and doesn't necessarily deliver the facts. So they're not a sponsor. They probably would not want to be aligned with a crazy right wing program like ours. But nonetheless, DuckDuckGo. Use it. Try it out. I'm telling you, it's the way to go. All right, we come back. Foreign policy, the economy, how it intersects with the race in 2020, I will explain. This, by the way, I think is quicksand for Trump, and we got to be careful. He has to be careful. And I also anticipate, in the same vein, I do anticipate a pivot, and I'll explain to you what I mean. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Rarely wrong, but always right. Keeping it real. Now, I have to tell you what's happening right now as we speak in Hong Kong is a matter of life and death. And it is a matter that should be of great concern to us here in America. And I'll tell you why. Because this protest, now in its 12th week, that these brave young people in Hong Kong are engaged in, this is a life and death struggle between truth and freedom and one of the most oppressive, horrific regimes that exists in the world today. Now, I am no I am no Beijing puppet stooge. I absolutely think that China and the government of China is abhorrent. It is abhorrent for two reasons. One, it does terrible things to its people. But the other part of it is a little more nuanced. They get away with it because they are of economic importance to so many governments in the West. Think of it in these terms. China is the Jeffrey Epstein of South Florida. Now, your producer Robbie's in there choking because he goes, what the hell is Sam talking about? Well, let me explain to you. You know, I read today that Jeff Epstein donated $90,000 to the Miami Sheriff's Department for some kind of a machine that tests shooting. I don't know what it was. But he was a regular benefactor for the police, for the prosecutors. I mean, he bought and paid for the protection that ultimately let him get away with rape after rape after rape. And China, the way they conduct themselves, right? I mean, nobody disputes that North Korea is a rogue regime. North Korea's PR is non-existent. No one in the West looks at North Korea and says, boy, you know what? They're a swell group of people. And probably the person in the West that is nicest to Kim Jong-un is Donald Trump, although there's certainly a strategy behind all of that. But China, being a vital trading partner of the United States, of the European Union, of Russia, of just about any country in the world, China goes in, trades, and buys complicity from people and hangs that. I mean, you see it right now. You see what's going on. And the biggest disappointment in all of this is the tweet that was sent by Donald Trump. I don't know if you caught this, but he writes a tweet to President Xi of China saying, I trust you're going to do the right thing. And he didn't support the protesters, and he was worming his way in to use the protests in Hong Kong as a bargaining chip in our trade dispute. Now, to understand Trump, in Trump's view, it's this trade dispute or bust because the economy right now is of vital importance to him in his reelection. I get it. I also understand that renegotiating a deal for us as a country comes first in Trump's mind, right? It's America first. He told us it would be America first. It wouldn't be the Free Hong Kong movement first, America second. Trump told us who he is. He will put America first, but I think it's a grave miscalculation. Because in order to prevail over China, we have to have the moral high ground, and we cannot, under any circumstances, give a hall pass to the slaughter I am convinced is hours, maybe days away. The Chinese are amassing troops at the border. They're training their anti-riot soldiers to use these electrified pitchforks that will essentially electrocute people in hand-to-hand combat situations. We are going to see there are tanks that are in, I believe, what is it, Shenzhen or just across the bay from Hong Kong. They're getting ready to invade. Now, these protests, let me just quickly remind you, if you don't know the history of this, the protest broke out when the puppet head of Hong Kong's territory, Carrie Lam, had a bill, proposed a bill, brought forward a bill that would allow the extradition of Hong Kong citizens to mainland China. Why is this a big deal? Well, it's a big deal because going back to the turnover of Hong Kong from a British territory to China, one of the promises that China made was that it would be one country, two systems, and that the Hong Kong Chinese would be allowed to maintain their own system of courts, their own system of government, their own system, their own political system and economic system. This was very important. It was important then not just to the people of Hong Kong, but also to the international community. And this bill essentially would be the first big step to completely undo that, because China could pick dissidents, people who oppose China, speak out against China, pick them up, tag them and bag them, send them to Beijing, put them on a puppet trial somewhere, and that's the last we'll ever see of them. They'll end up in a concentration camp, literally. And it was at that moment that this was about 12 weeks ago, when the bill was introduced, that people flooded in the streets. And the first wave of protests, to give you an idea how vast they were, it was about a third of Hong Kong's population that went into the streets. Imagine that. A lot of people. And they flooded the streets and they protest. And, you know, and the embattled head of Hong Kong, who's again, she's a Beijing puppet put in place there by the Chinese communists. She says, okay, I'm gonna table the bill for now, but that wasn't good enough. And wave after wave of protests have occurred since. Now, you know, this week they broke out into tremendous violence. They began beating people, bludgeoning people, the police at the airport in Hong Kong. And all of this is going on against a fight that we are having with China on trade. It is a righteous fight. And the person who ought to be on the back heel is Xi. China, his entire basis for being elected emperor for life. You know, they did away with term limits there and anointed Xi as some sort of modern day Chinese emperor. The deal there with the Communist Party is that if Xi gets this, he's going to make everything else good. Meanwhile, Donald Trump gets elected president. Trade is not good. Remember, trade is, I think, something like 90-10 or 20-80. 80% of trade with China, at least, are goods coming from China here. It's not the other way around. So you've got to remember what it's doing to the Chinese economy right now. They are in a world of hurt as a consequence of Trump's tariffs. Add to it this out-of-control, loss-of-face situation in Hong Kong. And the proper course of conduct, in my opinion, for Trump would be, if you lay a finger on any of these protesters in Hong Kong, we are done with you. You are done. The only place where you will be able to trade is what's left of the European Union and Africa. You can keep that, President Xi. But you are done with most favored nation status. Any BS thing that we have given you as a country over the past 40 years, you're done. And President Xi would now be faced with literally an existential threat to his governance as the head of the Communist Party and as the de facto president of life of China. But Trump amateured all over this, in my view. And his amateur move was, hey, let's talk. Let's do this. Let's debate this. Let's see. I mean, I'm not going to interfere in Hong Kong, but you better make a deal with me. And in negotiations, I don't think that works. I think you have to be absolutely devoted to an absolutist position and work your way down from there. Now, the reason Trump blinked is because all of this going on in Hong Kong ties into what's occurring in our own economy. And Trump is panicking. I get it. Our economy right now is teetering. There are indicators this week, the inverted yield curve being one of them, others having to deal with, well, this is bonds, but also dealing with home prices and that kind of thing. The key indicators of a slowdown, they're there. Now, we've got a lot of good signs in the economy. We have a tremendous amount of money in this economy, by the way. I have to tell you this. I'm keenly aware that investment, for example, right now is looking for any opportunity to make a buck. And they're maybe moving out of stocks because there's not much higher stocks can go given the fundamentals. But there is a tremendous amount of appetite in this economy to invest money. I will tell you that. Unemployment figures, excellent. A lot of good, strong indicators as well. But the pain that we are suffering is a fraction of what is being suffered in China. But the problem is when you're emperor for life, like Xi is, you don't have to worry about an election in 2 years. And Trump has to worry about the election. And therein occurred the blink. And I think if there is a moment in his presidency where he has been most vulnerable, it is right now. Because Trump wins this election if the economy is good. He wins it. Because as explained earlier in the program, immigration, the clarion call that Trump is a white supremacist and a racist, that he's got this racist wall, I am telling you that is a losing issue for any Democrat that wants to run against it. It's just eminently popular with the center right of this country. And that is the 50% plus one needed to win the election. But the economy will be a deciding factor for voters. Because in the economy, if the economy isn't good, I sense that Trump could face some abandonment. Now, let me explain. I mentioned earlier a pivot. One thing about Trump, and I saw this in the 2016 election when he was getting a little wobbly and a little nutty, is he is able, he is, contrary to what his critics say about him, he is able to change and evolve and moderate even. And I think that he, in the position where he begins to feel less emboldened, will do that. And I believe that you may actually, believe it or not, see a different Donald Trump in the coming months. We'll see how it plays out. But 100%, Trump needs to take a moral stand on Hong Kong. He absolutely has to, because it is in itself a tremendous bargaining chip, and it is an enormous pressure point for China. Now, to give you an idea why China is so powerful in co-opting people, it all has to do with their control over people's lives and money. I think I shared with you how in my own city here in Irvine, where I live, I went to a little dinner party. This was about a year ago. And at this dinner, the hosts, they were all Chinese. They're all mainland Chinese people that live here part of the year and live there, have businesses in China. And there was a handful of maybe 6 or 7 people there who were Chinese nationals. And we were talking, and I asked, this is right when the news was coming out about the Big Brother spying program that Beijing is putting in place, that, if you know what this was, we've talked about this before on the show, basically creates a social credit system that judges people based on, in part, their political activities, their political statements, and keeps people in line. Because if you say something against the government, the computer picks it up, they drop your credit rating. And if your credit rating drops below a certain point, you can't get airfare, you can't fly anywhere, you can't take a high-speed train, you can't apply for a home loan, and you're relegated to being a third-class citizen. So I asked them about this, and it's widely reported, documented. I know it exists. And they all look at me, these Chinese nationals, sophisticated people, and they nervously look back and forth, you know, in the room. And they all almost in unison, oh, no, that's not real. I've never heard of that. And the more I have thought of that conversation, the more I've thought of that whole weird reaction, it's not just that they were lying to me. It's that we were sitting in a living room in California, in Orange County, in the United States of America, where we have total freedom to express any opinion that we have. And they, right there in that room, were terrified of the long reach of communist Beijing and the dictatorship there. I'm going to explain what I mean by that, because I'm telling you, this is 100% real, and it explains why so many people, Jackie Chan, came out against the protest, saying, I know I was born in Hong Kong, but I am Chinese. You think he's doing that because he really feels that way? Or he's terrified that he will be ended financially and professionally by the communist regime in China? It's very obvious. And it reaches all the way here to many people that you may actually know yourselves. Sam Rogowski, back right after this.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Sam Rogowski, well, it's quite simple to me. I'm at that dinner party. I mention this new Orwellian system of social credit that's coming into the country. It's not even controversial, but it may very well be a matter of state secrecy. And these people in this living room in Irvine, California, are concerned that if they say something, if one of them says something, another one of them will report them to the authorities. And if you think that that's a kooky theory, I would submit to you that they, by the way, these people are all industrialists. They have factories in China. They produce things that you and I have in our homes. They're very well to do. But my suspicion is as these are citizens allowed to live abroad, they are, and I've heard this again through my sources, given where I live, I have a huge Chinese population around me, where they are summoned either or have to write reports on a yearly or biannual basis to the consulate, Chinese consulate, and report any negative commentary directed at Beijing and at the government of China. Now, you and I as Americans, we can't fathom this. But if you are, for example, like my parents who grew up in communist Czechoslovakia, this is an absolutely commonly done tactic by the regimes of that type. Does the actress Fan Bingbing mean anything to you? Fan Bingbing, one of the most famous actresses in China. She starred in a bunch of movies, a big blockbuster movies in the U.S. What was it? Was she X-Men? She was Days of the Future and Past, Iron Man 3. When suddenly she completely disappears. This is a gal who's making hundreds of millions of dollars. And she disappears. When she reappears, she's forced to give a groveling apology to the country of China. And she's been charged with tax evasion. Now, those people that know the story a little bit more realize that she was traveling internationally, was saying certain things that were critical of the Chinese government. And they decided to make an example of her and have ruined her. They took someone who had an enormous following, was immensely popular within the country, and turned her into a pariah. The message was very clear. You stand up to us. You think you're bigger than China. Nothing is bigger than China. And this is the type of system that Trump is up against. Now, I think he's certainly better equipped than Hillary or Obama or George W. Bush ever were. But it still is something that he fundamentally, as an American, cannot understand. Americans do not understand this level of fear, this level of control exerted by a government. We are so fat and happy here with our Bill of Rights. We don't even realize how bad some people have it in the world. And you saw in the news, and this is why when you hear about these protests in the coming weeks, do not be swayed by prominent Hong Kong Chinese coming out in defense of China. These are people that are covering their own A-money monies. The most wealthy billionaire in Hong Kong recently took out multiple full-page ads calling on peace and calm and allegiance to China. What do you think that's about? Not rocking the boat. And that is what business-minded people do. And this is why China is, and I said this was the second prong, why they were the worst regime in the world. The first prong was they've got death camps. They harvest corneas from political prisoners and organs. They do unspeakable, horrible things. But the other part of it is that they have so much financial control. We, the Americans, dating back to the age of Nixon, have allowed China to become a financial behemoth. And China, given the opening and stupidity, frankly, that we as America approached them with, have taken advantage and have become incredibly wealthy and in turn incredibly powerful. And so they buy complicity and they buy acceptance and they buy denial from third parties, much in the same way, I started with the Jeffrey Epstein comparison, much in the way a powerful criminal buys the complicity of law enforcement and of society around him by paying for complicity, by paying for relationships, by paying and being economically powerful and quote unquote too big to fail. The message that Trump needs to have for China is you are not too big to fail. And my strongest of thoughts go out to the protesters in Hong Kong. I wish them safety and I wish them success. And I tell you, the eyes of the world ought to be upon them and our best wishes ought to be upon with them. It is absolutely imperative. It's the right thing to do. And besides, the fight is against the Chinese government. They are an existential threat to all of us, not just to the protesters in Hong Kong. Sam Rogowski back right after this.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Majowski. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Lighten this up. News from Berlin, from a German zoo, is that there are a couple of penguins that apparently are gay. Now, from the Smithsonian Magazine, we have the following. A penguin couple have been trying to have a baby for months, and now they get their chance. The pair of male king penguins, these are the big penguins, Skipper and Ping moved from Hamburg to Zoo Berlin together earlier this year. Now, I guess once they got to the zoo, they started hanging out together and tried to incubate fish and rocks, basically anything that looked kind of or was the size of an egg. And I guess recently, another penguin there in the exhibit at the zoo, a 22-year-old female penguin, laid an egg but couldn't raise a chick. And so I guess the Skipper and Ping, the gay penguins, have taken to incubating the egg. There's no word from the zoo on whether the incubation has been successful. Doing this story I think is a little dangerous for me. But I'm going to go right into it. Can I ask a question? How do they know the penguins are gay? I've read a number of articles. There are no overt acts mentioned. What if they're just two guys that are hanging out together? Like me and producer Robbie, we occasionally will enjoy each other's company out in public. Is the assumption automatically that we're gay? Maybe. I, Oh, that's right. I think we talked about that on the program. Robbie and I took my kids out to dinner and got some awful prejudicial stares from patrons at the restaurant. I don't know what to make of this. I would definitely rename them Topper and Bottom. No. I don't know how that translates into German, but no, but I think that this is, I think that the merely hanging out and imitating in captivity behavior that they're watching other penguins, be it female penguins, doing, doesn't automatically mean that they're gay. I think that the real part of the story is that they're, all these reporters are assuming the sexual orientation of these two penguins. And to me, I think this is actually not woke at all. So, I don't know. And, yeah, and I think, would they be queen penguins? I don't know. I'll leave it there. Sam Murkowski back right after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Sam Murkowski, Sam Nation. All right. In related news, Ed Smart, the father of Elizabeth Smart, announced that he was leaving his wife and that he is a gay man. This was quite a surprise to me because back in 2002, if you remember, Elizabeth Smart was kidnapped by a handyman, a homeless vagrant that had done some work around the Smart home. The family lived in a beautiful part of Salt Lake City. And this story gripped the country, but also quite close to me because then as a practicing Mormon, as somebody who was visiting Utah quite often and later dating my wife who lived, I think, maybe less than 15 miles or so from the spot where all this happened, the story was very close to us. And, you know, it's this, I think this is actually quite a common phenomenon that is occurring where people later in life realize that they've been living someone else's expectations. And it's got to be a tremendously difficult and challenging thing to have to go through. I want to point something out, though. And last week, we talked about the sacrifices that a lot of people make to raise kids in a stable home. And I have heard a lot of nasty comments said about this story of Ed Smart. Namely, you know, he waited this long to figure himself out and, you know, and mean things about the church and the expectations placed on him by his religion. And I get all of that. And it's worthy of discussion. But on some level here, there's a guy who was conflicted, in my view. I don't know him, but I imagine this is how it was conflicted. Wanted to do the right thing. In his mind and his belief system, doing the right thing was to get married and to have a family. And he did that. And then as he became an older adult, realizing where he was at, he chose to not abandon his family. He waited for all of his kids to be raised and to be out of the house. And I don't know. Maybe I'm making excuses here, but I see some level of admirable conduct in all of this. And it relates to what we talked about last week on the show. So I wanted to bring it up. It's a challenge that a lot of people face, and it's not always a question of being a different sexual orientation. You know, some people just basically hate the wife or husband that they're with, and they're perfectly, you know, correctly aligned with their sexual orientation in the relationship they're in, but they're just not happy. And there are two paths. And one path, yeah, you get your happiness, you get your satisfaction, but at the risk of messing up young kids, it's a trade-off. And I understand that not always is that an acceptable sacrifice for people. My point last week and my point this week is that the trade-off is made, I think the decision is made with increasing ease in our society. And I tremendously admire people who sacrifice for the sake of keeping families together. And I think there's great nobility in it. And so I feel terrible for Ed Smart. I think that this has got to be an awful thing for him to have for so many years have dealt with. I feel terrible for his kids. But let's face it, the kids as adults are better equipped to handle this. And you know, think about it too. You know, his family went through tremendous trauma. Maybe this is something he wanted to do earlier, but it just wasn't the right time, and he couldn't do it given everything else that had been going on. So I don't know if these are the reasons. I don't pretend to understand. I've read his statement. It's very eloquent. He describes not having a place any longer in his church, in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. That is tough. It's tough to, in one fell swoop, leave your religion, leave your family, leave your wife. That's a decision I think that we're lucky if we never have to face. But behind it is a story of sacrifice, I suspect. And from that side of it, I respect it. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rogowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word.
Speaking
in
of family sacrifice,
as
Chris
opposed to
Cuomo,
Ed, which is drunk thinking.
Well, last weekend, total
and that's
meltdown.
Where the left
he
ends
was
up,
out at a
on the wrong side of right
outdoor establishment, I guess, with his family. And some guy, some Yahoo, comes up to him and calls him Fredo. Now, the idea behind calling him Fredo is that Chris Cuomo is the weak, stupid son of the late Mario Cuomo, who was the governor and political giant in New York City. He's the younger brother of Anthony Cuomo, Andrew Cuomo, who is the governor, current governor of New York. And Chris Cuomo's the gadfly anchor reporter on CNN who is kind of adult. So the nickname for him, Fredo, comes, it's relevant to The Godfather, the movie, where Fredo is the, given, well, he's the older brother, but the stupid weak brother of Michael Corleone. Here is the exchange part. We've tried to beep out the bad language. I think you can kind of tell what it is. So if you've got innocent, sweet children in the car, I'm not talking about my children, but if you have real innocent children in the car, you might want to lower the volume a bit. Here goes.
I thought that's who you were.
Honestly. No, punk bitches from the right call me Fredo. My name is Chris Cuomo. I'm an anchor on CNN.
Oh, you're much...
Fredo is from The Godfather. He was that weak brother.
Isn't that your
and
brother?
And they use it as an Italian aspersion. Any of you Italian?
I'm a little
you
bit.
Italian?
I got a little bit.
It's an insult to your people. It's an insult to your fucking people. It's like the N-word for us. Yeah, but if you want to play, then we'll fucking play.
Hey, man, hey, listen.
What?
I don't want any problems with you, man.
Yeah, you're going to have a fucking problem.
What are you going to do about it?
I'll fucking throw you down these stairs like a fucking punk.
So I thought the most perplexing part of the story is that even Sean Hannity went to Chris Cuomo's aid and sent out a tweet that same day saying this: the guy that came up to him when he was eating with his family was way out of line, and that he fully supports Chris Cuomo. Okay, I get it, because Hannity's probably out in public with his family all the time and has a-holes coming up to him, telling him things. But I have to say, the reason that Chris Cuomo is called Fredo is precisely because he acts like this. If you go back to The Godfather, Fredo was the one who was always losing his mind over every perceived slight and was flying off the handle, and Michael Corleone was the brother that kept it together. So sometimes with these things, it becomes a self-perpetuating deal. Now, I'll tell you, did you see that he had called himself Fredo back in 2010? Cuomo has a short memory. Here he is with host Curtis Sliva on AM 970. That's back in 2010. Listen to the exchange.
Well, see, I've dubbed it La Cuomo Nostra, that there is a group of people, of politicos, who always hint that they might run but don't necessarily plunge all the way, and they are members of La Cuomo Nostra.
So who am I then, Fredo?
Yes, exactly. So you better be careful that your brother Andrew doesn't kiss you on both cheeks, and then all of a sudden they take you out into the middle of the lake, and then, where's Chris?
And no problem with it. The idea that Fredo is the N-word to Italians is absurd. And I love that all week it basically got bantered about and used. Just absolutely ridiculous. CNN should be ashamed. But they're not. They don't care. So this has become a funny thing. And I think the takeaway is that Cuomo and the whole network over there are so lost in Trump-hating land. And they're so keen to turn everything into a racial paradigm that they lose track completely of reality and end up as a self-parody of themselves. And it's fun. It's fun to watch it. All right. We've had a great show. Thank you so much. I think we've covered not everything, but almost everything. We got the Penguins in. That's the most important part. Have a wonderful rest of your weekend. Love you all. Thank you for everything you do. See you not next week. We're taking the week off next week, and we will be back the week after. Sam Rojofsky, over and out. People.